Would you introduce yourself, please?
My name is Nika, and I'm Zola Jesus.
Raised in Wisconsin, but technically born in Arizona, is that correct? It was really cold, your dad was a hunter, you saw lots of blood and lots of meat, yuccarama. Yes, I did, this is why I'm doing this. Let's see, vocal coach, young, opera studied philosophy, Dostoevsky, Nietzsche, et cetera, et cetera, Seattle, blah, blah, blah. So you see, I've just rattled off all that stuff that people spend 99% of their time asking in interviews, and I don't, because it's not that I don't care, but yeah, you see, you've read your Wikipedia too. Who wrote your Wikipedia?
I don't know. Actually, I can't read it. It scares me, but I know what's on there, because these are the most common questions that are asked of me.
Why does it scare you to read your about yourself?
The idea of being a person of the public world is very intimidating.
But you should have thought of that before you did this.
Yeah, here's the problem.
I had no intentions of doing what I'm doing right now.
No.
I fell into the rabbit hole, and magically, here I am.
It's not that. I've wanted this my whole entire life, and you've got to understand the risks that you have to take for getting it.
Yes, and some have done that really well, and others, and I've seen both.
Yeah.
We're doing okay so far. But what I like, and this is where the opportunity is, I like revisionist history. Tell me, and this is not like a challenge, but tell me a couple of things that you've always wished that was an answer you could give, or something that would really inform people about what they hear and what they see.
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot out there. That's the thing. There's a lot of content out there on me. But at the root of it, you know, I'm just trying to make music that feels universal in some way.
So what does universal mean to you? Does that mean that you want a lot of people to hear it because they love it? And I just put that in your mouth, but that's what it sounds like to me.
No, I meant the things that I sing about, the things I write about, and the reason that I make music, because it helps me feel a part of the world in a universal way. And the things that I try to express through my music is a universal thing.
Tell me about your inner world now. And you're going to have to help me, because my grandfather was from Russia. My grandmother was from Poland, but yeah, so there's a lot of Ruski in me, which is like, by the way, like saying, you know, Frisco in a San Francisco way, right? T-A-I-G-A. Pronounce it for me the right way, please.
Taiga.
Yeah, you see? You're going to have a lot of people. That was the new record from Zola Jesus, and that's Taiga.
Like I said, I don't make it easy for people.
No, you don't. But I know that there's a combo punch there, that those are the major amounts of trees in Russia, but also where you grew up back in that Wikipedia overpronounced cold area, correct?
Correct, yeah.
So the second that I listened to track number one, that's like an overture. And that feels like something. Now, I've seen the teaser video, and we're not going to talk about that because that's a teaser video. That's a marketing piece. But I heard that opening track, and then I actually read what it was about, which is more fun for me. But that kind of, I call it a giant chant. Opening that album is like this big, giant, monster chant. And that felt right for what the record was about. And I bet that was intentional.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like this echo through the forest. You know, it's you and you're alone and you can feel your voices double. And in a way, the trees become the people. And yeah, but at the same time, it feels massive and without boundaries.
You said that you want to get to a point, and this isn't in the Wikipedia, this was another interview, that you want to get to a point where people's veins will hurt when they listen to the record. But this is a big record. I put on the headphones. I have one good pair of headphones that I took with me from California, and I put them on, and I was like, okay, they're starting to rattle here. So is that veins hurting? Is veins hurting to you about big? Is it about the emotions? Or is it about the whole? And I think it's about the whole thing, obviously.
Yeah, it's about the whole thing. I want to make music that feels visceral. I want it to jump out of your headphones and into you. And I want it to be something that you can keep with you and that becomes a part of your DNA. You know, I don't want to just make music that you can wash the dishes to or go to a party and hear at a club. That's not my intention.
What happens when somebody takes the popular tracks on the record and comes to you within seconds, if they haven't already, and said, ready to do the club mix?
That's something I'm coming to terms with, because I never allowed remixes, but I am all about facing my demons, and I'm all about challenging myself to do things that make me terribly uncomfortable, and a club remix makes me shake in my chair.
What really scares you is that they're going to take what you've really spent a lot of time thinking about, both sonically and in terms of the fabric of the piece, and then like kind of taking all the threads out and putting them back in?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest concern as an artist when you create a piece of work, you know, you've thought over every detail, and everything exists for a reason, you know? So you feel like the integrity of your song is being compromised when someone doesn't respect the music. But usually, if I were to work with a remixer, I would trust that they respect the music and respect an overall vision, or, you know, I trust their judgment.
So you really were very thoughtful about this record, right down to, well, let's get to the important stuff. Let's get to the fact, and again, well told already, that you recorded it in one place, you mixed it in another place. But your choice to go out into the wilderness, is that thematic with the trees and everything else? Was there a reason for that, or was it because it was just a studio that you thought you were going to get the sounds you were going to get?
Well, what I did is I went to this island in Washington off of Seattle. It's called Vashon. It's a beautiful little island, and I got a house there. And because I can work by myself, I can produce by myself, I had a little studio room, and that's where I wrote the record. And that's what I need. I'm a very introverted person, so to be alone, I feel truly liberated. And at that moment, you know, being in a studio by myself and having the freedom all hours of the day, that's what makes me feel truly empowered to create a work like this.
But that was a self-imposed exile. And again, the tale keeps getting told that self-imposed exile got to a point where you said, and you didn't leave the island, you didn't go into Seattle during that whole time, or did you?
I would go once a week to go shopping, grocery shopping, something like that.
But you didn't partake in Seattle as a big city. You purposely environmentally kept to yourself.
Definitely, yeah. Yes.
This is the first album, and it's funny that we're sitting here doing this here. So this is the first record on Mute. Mute has a really interesting, if you think about the label, this is a really great place for you to be, because the people surrounding you, it makes sense. It really makes sense, and it's obvious to me that they're going to do the right thing. But what was the choice? Because this is your first major, I'm going to do a full announcement, your first major indie label, right?
Yes, yeah. But my whole musical life, I've been with Sacred Bones, which is a small label, but they're my family, and they're part of the whole Zola Jesus thing, you know, they've been with me since the beginning. So to make this leap was a huge emotional transition, but I respect and admire Mute so much, and it just feels like a natural fit.
How did that leap happen?
I just wanted to try something different. So
who came to who? Whom?
I came to Mute. I think I came to me. I mean, it was kind of mutual at the same time, because
that's a good pun, by the way.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah. But yeah, it was just it felt like a mutual fit. Yeah, one of my very early shows, they came and I met them, and I was, you know, of course, starry-eyed, because Mute has always been a label that I loved, and I love their integrity, and so through the years we've kept in touch. And then when I decided that it was time that I wanted to try something new, you know, of course Mute was one of the first on my mind.
So back to the producers. So you record this in exile. So was this producer or mixer? And when you handed over the tracks, were you there? Did you work with him? What was the integration there? You're laughing and you're smiling, because it's one of my favorite things, because there's always a great tale there.
So it's so interesting, and this is why I've been so afraid of working with producers in the past, is because I am a female singer, and it's really hard for people to imagine that I also can, you know, work my way around a computer and make the songs myself or play instruments. Unfortunately,
I completely disagree with that premise.
You're rare and you're unique. So when I was in Vashon on this island writing, it was me and my husband. My husband is not involved in my music whatsoever. He's just a huge supporter. But I would go into my little studio. I work in Logic. I worked in Logic for this record. And I would produce. I would make beats, you know, and that's just how I work. And then when I felt like I got as far as I could, I went to Los Angeles and worked with Dean Hurley, who was an amazing guy and very talented. And I was intending for him to mix the record, but he would have ideas about certain songs. And I just felt he was invaluable. And I felt like, You know, without him, I couldn't have made a record so large scale. You can't do that on your own. I don't care, man or woman, you can't make a big record like this on your own. I'm gonna need a trombonist. I can't learn trombone on my own. So it was a huge, point in my life where I had to go, okay, in order to achieve what I want to, I need to let go a little bit.
So it worked. It was, you walked in there with trepidation, and it actually, you walked out with, wow, I actually got something I never would have gotten otherwise.
Yeah, and it certainly, and I felt like I had a really good match. Dean is an incredible guy, and we got along very well, and he was very respectful of, I'm the exec, you know, so I tell him what to do, but, you know, his ideas were also very good, and I used them.
So you mentioned trombone, because one of the things that, see, I couldn't tell, like the horns, they sound like I knew they weren't truly synth horns, but by the time they've gone through everything they've gone through, there's some pretty interesting sounds there. It's like the marching band from hell.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of real brass, and there's a lot of real brass blended in with sampled brass to give it a different feel.
When this all adds up and I'm listening to the songs, this is a pretty intense record. And one of the things, and intense in a good way, I mean, it made me feel something right away. But one of the things that people are already starting to write, and I have a thing against certain places where there are erudite writers who are 22 and love using big words and do reviews that way. And it might have a fork or a pitch in it or something like that. But there's already the, well, she's looking to make a pop record now. So this is already in the ether. How can we get rid of that early on?
I think...
Or do we not want to, and do we not care?
I don't really care because I know where my intentions lie with my ambition, you know? My ambition is to create something that could potentially change the world. I mean, who doesn't want to change the world? Do I want to make a record that is only for a very small group of people who already understand the messages I'm trying to communicate? No, I want to make a record where I teach people things. I want to console people, and I want to teach them, and I want to move them and change them. And it's a tall order, but at the same time, you know, it takes a lot of ambition. Pop record? I don't know. It was my goal from the beginning to be a songwriter, to create songs that you could sing. I could sing without even a microphone. I could sing without any sort of effects or without a computer or without a sampler or without a guitar or a piano, and they will still be the songs. Because at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. It's about the song.
But that's a great segue to now, when you take this, now you've got the big record. So when people are seeing this after it comes out and they're seeing it live, are you going to do all sorts of neat stuff? Are you working with really groovy designers, and will there be cool visuals and all that other lovely stuff?
Of course. That's half of it. I mean, for me, when I create music, I create environments. And when I think about the music, I think about creating a conceptual world, you know, made out of optimism and idealism. It, you know, in a way, you know, when you write, you're trying to contribute something new to society. So you're thinking about how can you improve the world. So of course, when you take it to the live stage, how can I present this music as a new idea, as a new sort of environment, as a new way to approach the world, you know? And I love to try to interpret that visually. Certainly, I mean, I can't lie. I've been planning on playing Madison Square Garden since I was probably 6 years old, since I knew what it was, you know? Because an arena, it gives you space, it gives you opportunity to make something that is truly transcendental and a live experience. And yeah, that's my goal.
And I imagine you also are hard at work on the videos that are going to appear on all those little computers.
Well, Hunger to me has always been one of the centerpieces of the album because it is so frenetic and it feels like my ambition contextualized in music. And to make a video for that, I feel like would be really exciting. Hollow would be a really big cinematic video. I mean, I have video ideas for all of this.
But
songs.
Where do you give up control on the video side? Because you obviously, do you storyboard it out and then say, okay, make me this? Or how do you collaborate? Because again, you have such a strong vision and they are your songs.
Well, for me, the most important thing about the videos is that it communicates a visual language. And so I need to make sure that the director is fluent in that language. And at the same time, if I feel like a narrative is important, I will communicate that as well and make sure that that's in the video. I usually don't like narratives in videos because I like them to be more abstract.
Yeah.
So I do give a little bit more control over to the director because I trust them and because, you know, I'm not a visual artist. I'm a musician, and I can't pretend that I am, but I have a very, very strong visual aesthetic, and I know what I like and I know what I don't like, and I think that, you know, I have the taste, and so I give that, make sure that my director channels that.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and what it is two of your songs is the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between, and what it becomes is 40 minutes of solid music.